You are listening to show number 45 of the Burnham and Dodge Art Hour.
Cleared, yeah. You gotta stop smoking.
Yeah, I gotta give up those bad ones or something here, you know, start doing more or whatever, but whatever to clear that throat out. Mm. Yes, hello again, everybody.
Well,
out
spring
there.
Has sprung here in Western New York.
It is sprung.
Yes, yes. There's finally some spots and pops up of green on our trees and bushes around.
Well, I hate
here.
It, you know, like when you're sitting on an old couch and the spring gets you right in the ass. Hoo ha!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, you
God.
Know. Watch out.
That sprung is springing me, you know? But,
Did you know they don't want you to have upholstered furniture on porches no more in the city of Buffalo?
Why not? Why don't they allow that?
They say it attracts nuisances.
Like porch monkeys?
Yeah. Exactly.
I got to tell you.
Too comfortable or something.
I got to tell you, when I was a college student many years back, I was walking home. It's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
It's like summertime, so I'm wearing just a T-shirt and shorts.
Yeah,
you know,
nice
sneakers. I'm walking home. It starts raining like crazy.
Oh, you're kidding.
So I jumped on the front porch of a person's house.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? It's raining, you know.
Right.
I'm just like, I didn't want to catch cold or something.
Oh, no.
So they had a vinyl tablecloth on their table.
Oh.
And I said, I'm going to borrow this. So I borrowed it and I went home with it. And it got me home. You know, it protected me slightly. So 2 days later, I brought it back at 1 in the morning and dropped it off in a bag and with a note attached to it saying, thank you, this saved my life during the rainstorm. I mean, those people thought it was gone forever, you know?
That thing must have blown away, but I didn't find it on the street nowhere. How could that possibly be? That kept him puzzled for a while.
I tell you.
Oh,
you know,
I guarantee it.
Life is so full of various permutations.
Yes,
it keeps us going.
But again, ladies and gentlemen, we want to welcome you to, once again, the Burnham and what?
Dodge
Art Hour, where we do what?
Where we ask the musical question, if a light sleeper sleeps with a light on, what does a hard sleeper sleep with?
They sleep with rocks, more like that. Well, one guy said, I think the other guy slept with a hard on.
Oh, no. You're not supposed to. We are a family show.
Yeah.
Of course, it's the Addams Family show.
Yeah,
that's what our show is. That's what our show is.
Absolutely. Brought to you by those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I'm so happy to have a guest. You know, it's not just us.
Not like our last show.
Our last show was just us.
That's
but we do
right.
have a guest here in the studio again tonight.
That's right. He's looking around for who's his the guest.
He's looking around.
He looked behind himself over there. Hey, wait a minute.
He happens to be named George Grace.
Yes.
Now, is Grace really your last name, George? Seriously?
Yeah, or how did you get a name like
that? Or was it some like weird Hungarian
something
name
like
that was
Grazia from Portugal?
Okay.
You know, we were wetbacks. We rode the whales in, and then we clubbed them to death and got the blubber.
Okay. Yeah, that seems to make sense. Yeah.
What a name. I went to school years ago with a girl named Grace, but it was her first name.
Yeah.
There was nothing graceful about her either. Boy.
Oh, yeah.
It was like 6'2" and wide and heavy, you know. And she was nothing. The name just didn't fit her.
Yes, we are the Burnham and Dodge Art Hour.
That is correct.
And we do actually request that our listeners listen, learn, and
laugh.
And laugh. That's right. We have a good time on this show.
We try.
And it's not
best.
Just because of the gin, but the gin definitely helps.
Well, it is a good thing to have around to help things move along, you know?
It does.
Also, if you throw raisins in the gin, it's good for
raisins and good for
arthritis.
Oh, well, hey, I look into doing that. I got a knee over here that keeps on acting silly.
You know, if you put craisins, which are dried up cranberries, remember, cranberries are good for the prostate.
Since
we're all like old farts here, right?
Yeah.
We're all over 50.
Sure.
Cranberries are probably really good for our old prostates. So.
Well, you know, with the gin and raisins.
Yeah, I know. I got old in one night. Believe me, folks.
No, I really had to cough. I wasn't like just saying that.
I woke up the next day. I was old.
Don't you hate when that happens?
Yes, I do. I was middle-aged, but the next day I woke up, I was an old man.
Yeah, I know how that feels.
Just like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel it now.
Speaking of starting out late in life, first, George is not just, we don't say why he's on the show.
No, we know why he's on the show. You should know why he's on the show if you listen to the show.
You're a painter, you're a photographer, you're a poet, you write. You've written
articles.
He's like
a Renaissance man over there.
And you own a gallery with three other people.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm old, but I'm not Renaissance. I'm kind of post-Renaissance.
Yeah. As long as you're not post-menopausal.
Yeah, post-metabolic.
So, you wear a hat of many colors.
Yeah.
Is that the right term?
Yeah, that's the right term. The black guys over here, you go along.
Yeah, the hat of many colors.
It starts at this color, really dark, and lightens up over here.
Yeah. Now, you started painting at 30, George. I mean, what took you so long?
Discouragement from my father. He was the president of the Pastel Society when I was, about the time I was born, Pastel Society in Buffalo.
Didn't know we had one.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a, you know, pastel artist. But my father discouraged me from painting. You know those little drawings they had on the backs of comic books? This could be worth $1,500 if you draw. Well, my family was going through a hard time financially. I thought, I could be a family hero. I can draw this on the back of this comic book, and it's worth $1,500. So I did it, and I showed it to my father. And he looked at it, and he said, well, he explained scholarships to me. It's a scholarship in, I don't know, some art school.
Decatur, Illinois, I think. Learn to draw at home in your spare time.
That's right.
So he head on the back of the turtle, whatever it was.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I was eight years old. So he held up the drawing. He said, you'll never be an artist.
Oh, that's encouragement.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So my dad, that's one of his lines, you know.
Son,
this is not going to work, you know.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
So I trust them for a long time. So that's essentially how I ended up delaying my development as an artist.
Well, if you would enlighten us on the story, I read about your story in your profile, your biography on the webpage that we will be linking to.
We got a link to that there, and a chain you, to go with and a ball to go
you
with that.
You found yourself stranded in your apartment when your two roommates deserted you.
Stranded in his own apartment.
I know this is unusual.
We'll strand this guy in the apartment here, and we'll take.
Now this is unheard of in Buffalo, but it did happen to me. I would. One left behind 150 feet of prime canvas.
Wow.
The other left behind a box of acrylic paints.
Whoa.
I thought we could put the two together and make artworks. So
sounds like a plan to me, Stan.
You were living with two artists. They were two artists.
Well, they weren't really practicing any art. Why would you leave all that behind if you're unless you really want to get out of town?
I like that
fast.
Guy. I said, get out of town fast. That's the art of those guys. It's the artful Dodger. Make like your name.
Yeah.
You could have just made one of those huge murals, you know, that goes on and on. Like, this is the panorama of the Mississippi.
Henry Lewis did that.
Right?
He did. 3/4 of a mile long.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know how we'll get it out of the apartment once we get it, but
And Henry Lewis actually inspired me to start painting because I had what I thought was a Henry Lewis painting that my father gave to me, or actually left when he split the house.
Son, you can't paint, but I'm going to give you this anyway.
Yeah.
Well, it's better than a beat-up old guitar and an empty bottle of booze.
There you go.
Well, I don't know. The bottle of booze.
Empty bottle of booze. Don't get it, though. Let's be honest about it.
We're not going to go there.
That's bad enough. An empty bottle of booze?
Is there a warning Will Robinson sort of moment here? No, go away from that.
We can't do another empty bottle of booze. Can't trade it in, can you? Not for a full one, though.
Exactly.
Yeah, he gave me this Henry Lewis painting. Well, I didn't know what it was. I thought it was something he painted. It was obviously an old painting. And in fact, it was the guy who left behind the prime canvas who said, I think that's a Henry Lewis. And I said, what's that? And he told me the history of Henry Lewis painting the Mississippi River. There was no signature on the painting.
Ooh.
So I tried to get it authenticated, and I didn't know anything. I didn't know who to go to, except I heard about Tony Sisti.
Yeah.
Well, I took it to him, and he said, this is obviously someone who's self-taught. Now, I'd done some research. Yeah, okay, we got one.
Self-taught.
Henry Lewis also came through Buffalo on his way back to Europe.
That makes sense.
And there were all these other things that said, this could be a Henry Lewis painting. So what happened was he talked me into leaving it with him to restore.
Oh, okay.
4 weeks later, I came back.
Yeah.
And he had butchered it.
Oh, wait a minute now.
He'd cut six inches off there. It was a lovely scene. I have a copy of it in the gallery.
He cut 6 inches?
Oh. Yeah, they're, you know, guys, if when they cut off six inches, you're short.
You're short there.
Well, in the Bible, they had a lot of hills of foreskins, you know.
Yes, a lot of nervous people out there.
Israelites would attack the Canaanites or something. Point. And, yeah.
Never let an artist cut off 6 inches.
Well, that nervous laughter, though, from those guys, you know.
We won't go where this direction is.
Tell us about it. Do you want to go that way or not, you know?
So he butchered it. So then I decided, well, I had to go to him for authentication.
Yeah.
So now to sue him, how do I prove that it had any value and what its value? Yeah. What was its value if the person who authenticated it butchered it? So I took a shot, stab in the dark, and I went to small claims court. Yeah. I filed a lawsuit for $1,500.
Right.
His in the interim, Tony suffered a stroke. So he was in Sisters Hospital. I gave a sum, I didn't know this. Ooh. I gave my friend the summons to deliver to his place, and they said, "Oh, he's in the hospital with a stroke."
Wow.
So my friend came to me and reported that he went right up to his bedside. Tony Sisti, yes. Summons, blink, you know, another stroke.
Take that. Spittle. You know, watch out, he's doing it again. Yeah. He's doing it again.
So,
what was the denouement here?
I got a call the next day from his lawyer. He said, "Well, what if we just give you your $200 back?" I said, "Wait a minute, if this were a Velvet Elvis worth $49.95 at the Starving Artist thing, and he's charging me $200 to restore it, that would be $249.95.
Exactly.
And
you do the math. That's all you got to do. Just do the math.
So I said, anyway, he said, "Well, I'll call the family and see if we can negotiate double your money back. How's that?" Fine, I'll take whatever. So he called back. He probably set the phone down, you know, had a cup of coffee, popped a few pills, called me up. Yeah, okay, go for it. Lawsuits against him were not he probably had a lot of business in that regard.
Hey, I got a little more business.
Steve was a good artist, but there was a great sleaze factor.
So, what George is telling us, he doesn't even have to paint something and he was able to sell it.
You're right.
You imagine
okay. Right.
So that's where you got the idea to start a gallery, right?
You're right.
Smart man.
Right.
I don't have to paint a thing, but guess what? I can sell it.
I can sell it.
That's what I'll do. That's my calling.
You were an unpracticed painter.
Right.
When you first began.
Right. I had been laid off from Bethlehem Steel in 78. I went to college. Nothing panned out with that.
Oh.
And I
don't believe that.
Sliding. This is Buffalo, remember. Work completely ran out, so I went on welfare. So here I am in this apartment.
Now, wait a minute.
The apparent, I was on the dole.
Wait a minute.
I had my electricity shut off, the heat shut off. Mm. I was 2 months behind the rent, and my roommates had skipped out.
I love this
leaving
stuff.
Behind all. Right.
He took a long slide, didn't he?
Yeah, long slide.
Yeah, long wait before you get home.
So as Mae West said,
yes.
I had nothing to do and a lot of time to do it.
Okay.
While waiting for the food stamps and the public assistance. And I thought, I'll just view all that as a subsidy to the arts.
Necessity is the mother, right, of all invention.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Found yourself in a place and you took advantage of it. That's where
found himself in a place. There's a song in there somewhere, but I'm not a songwriter.
Well, you could have just hung out and watched TV and read books or something.
Yeah, counting flowers on the wall.
Counting flowers.
Watching Captain Kangaroo.
Isn't that an old song by the Statler Brothers?
Yeah, I always liked it.
We'll play a little bit of that right now.
That's why I painted my bedroom, because it had flowers on the wall, and by the time that song came out, and I had a TV, and I'm going, I don't like the way this is coming together.
It was a big hit.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
That painted the bedroom. Got rid of all those flowers on the wall.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
That was terrible.
Looked like it came from the time of Rabbi Shankar.
Yeah.
Or the Jewish sitarist, Rabbi Shankar.
Somebody got the shank in the shaft on that one. That's all I know.
I think it's so groovy now. No, George, don't sing. You weren't listed as a singer. You're right.
What was your first painting of? Was it a still life?
No. Well, it was kind of dead when I... It's kind of a dead life. Oh,
good. All right.
Do I hear applause?
Yeah.
It's the angels. Well, I didn't know what to paint.
Oh, man.
So I was
with the flowers on the wall.
I was looking through a book of masterworks, and I thought, oh, I'll never own anything like this. I'll probably never even see anything like this. So I started doing copies of masterworks, and I did
copies of masterworks.
Vincent van Gogh.
Yeah.
Picasso, and I started with that.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I had friends, you know, who we know, Mike Meyer and, you know, a bunch of musicians.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh la la, you know, that's pretty ooh good la stuff. La. I feel like I'm on the left bank.
I've got to run that movie again. My accent is getting weak.
My knees are, yeah.
Well, you were a starving artist in the West Bank.
All those in Western New York, this West
James
Bank.
James McNeil Whistler hanging out.
Yeah. How unusual that there might be an artist with some kind of destitution. Yeah. especially in Buffalo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, what do we have? Two seasons in Buffalo? Winter and construction.
Winter construction. It started already. Yes,
I moved into the city, you know, after I moved away from home to go to college, and I'm living in an apartment with three women.
Well, what's wrong with that? I saw that movie.
That was fine because they were always cold, so they always had the heat up.
You know, I thought they were cold or something.
So I moved off on my own finally, and I realized how expensive it was to heat a place, and so I kept the heat down.
Especially without those girls.
You know, and it just, and I realized, too, that winter lasts 6 months in Buffalo.
Yes.
I had a girlfriend at the time. She goes, do you know it's winter? The furnace comes on like in October, and it doesn't go off till April.
That's correct.
She goes, that's 6 months. And I go, wow, I never realized that.
Did.
You know? It's cold here a lot of the time, right? You know? Right.
Yes.
And in that period of time, usually from October till about May, I don't see anything other than my wife's head. You know, she's buried under a comforter for the entire duration.
Just a head floating through the house, you know.
Teddy Roosevelt could ride to the top and plant a flag. San Juan Hill.
Maybe those little bunny slippers came out of the
little bunny.
Yeah. I find hot tea works tremendously in this climate for sure.
Oh yeah. Well, you spice it up a little bit, works out even better.
So you started painting, 30 some years ago?
You're thinking, right?
I can't get over it though.
And you haven't stopped. I mean, how'd you end up in Nashville?
Oh, do you have time for this story? Oh
my God. That's why you're on the show.
The part I like the best is the simple fact that you went to college and you flopped, right?
I was summa cum laude as a paralegal.
Why not getting laid off from work?
There were no paralegal jobs.
Don't hold back here.
He's got to find his car sulking on a pedestal cinder block.
And then you wind up on what food stamps get involved in all this.
Well, see the problem is you're the wrong color. That's the problem.
You're talking to a sensitive man here.
it just blows the whole thing out the window here.
My art resume, you do that to a poet, they sob and all that. You do it to an artist, they sob and all that. You're doing it to a poet who was an artist.
Yeah.
Now it's like
paralegal
a double whammy. Wait, maybe it's negative negation.
Well, that
two negatives make a positive.
I know I'm bouncing around here.
Okay, Nashville.
Nashville.
Yeah. We'll Nashville. To make a long story short,
two times.
Donna ran for city council.
Your wife?
Yes, my wife in 1999 from the Niagara District.
I remember that.
She lost the election to the political machine.
Naturally.
But the news reached an old friend of hers from 30 years earlier, from high school, who had gone to Nashville, got into broadcasting, CBS affiliate in Nashville, came up through the ranks with Oprah Winfrey, met and married a gazillionaire who, you know, and she contacted Donna after all this time and said, how would you and your husband like to move to Nashville? I'll give George an arts grant and I'll give you a job.
They got a river that goes through Nashville.
Yeah, they've got a big river. And every morning I'd get up and come out into the living room. Donna would be on the computer. She'd go, guess what? This Ruth Harnish is her name. Guess what Ruth is offering us? And she would, every day there would be something new. She's going to buy us two cars.
Two cars.
If we move.
Two cars.
What
kind?
Well, we ended up getting Hondas, but she's going to, she's going to give us, a place to stay, you know, like, a cottage up in the hills outside Nashville that we can live in for rent free.
Oh, wow.
She's sending me a check for $10,000. She's just throwing things on the pot. She's married to this gazillionaire.
And you had really nothing to keep you in Buffalo at that point.
Nothing.
Right? Well, I guess not. I mean, you can get food stamps anywhere in the country.
Yeah.
Checks are filed. It doesn't matter.
That was one period when we didn't need food stamps. Yeah. She was
good to hear.
She was taking care of us quite well. She flew us to New York. Her husband is one of those Wall Street. One of the guys that, you know, shook down America.
So you had no problem being a kept couple?
No, we were very much a kept couple.
I could stay a little vacation time like that myself.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. Mm-hmm.
I know, people, you know. I tell people this story and they go, does she hand out any more grants? I want to deal with her. Sure.
I deal with that, you know.
So, Ruth didn't live in Nashville anymore. When she married, she moved to, you know, New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay.
Yes, right.
Mm. Her husband, she and her husband had condos on the 59th and 60th floor of the Metro building on West 57th Street.
Oh. Not a bad spot to look out the window from.
Donna took me into 59D.
Yeah.
And she said, close your eyes. And she led me to this point of windows where that one painting I did of Donna is, you know, she's looking out that window. I stood in the corner of that, right in front of those windows, looking out over Manhattan for 3 days without moving.
Watching the sunrise?
Yeah. Okay. I could hardly, I didn't even breathe. I just stood there with my jaw agape, looking at all of Manhattan, the East River,
they
the Hudson River.
They thought it was a sculpture standing in the window for the other apartment across the way.
Yeah, right.
They got a new piece of art standing there, don't they? Yeah, it had to move.
The view from up there was breathtaking. And they had that, you know, probably a $2 million, $3 million condo as a guest condo.
Oh, man.
So, you know, moving on up.
You got to admire a man like that. Let me see. I came from this poverty. Hey, you know,
ain't too proud to be sweet mama.
Now, you're a musician, right? You do play, right? You
play. I play. Yeah, I play guitar.
The reason I brought that up is because I'd like to compare
these days.
I'd like to compare George's work to, all right, in music, there are several ways to play a musical scale. Right. I mean, you know, there's diatonic and pentatonic.
Well, you're talking about tonics. I don't know.
The most common scale is what's your major. You know, so you got a full note, a full step, a half step, you know, as you go up the major.
Right.
And that's usually upbeat. And then there's the minor scale, which is a little bit solemn and forlorn sounding, you know, because it flats. Flats the third and the sixth notes.
Well, you
got to
draw me a picture
scale.
Of that one of these days.
I'll do that and I'll show you.
I can understand it.
But George.
Draw me a picture of this.
George, time. I'd say your paintings, if they were music, they'd most definitely be in the major scale.
Whoa. Because
they're not solemn and depressing. Yeah. I mean, your sense of color is just so rich and wealthy.
I agree with that.
Give me another synonym other than rich. But I think, you know, that's what I get out of looking at your work.
Yeah.
Okay.
It attracted me musically. if you can understand that.
Go for it. You know? Keep going, by all means. Hey, give them some more of that stuff.
It's a major scale. And I mean, like, all right, I'm looking at a picture, and again, this will be linked to on the website. There's a picture here that George has called Ellis Island. And it's a beautiful shot of the...
Oh, you got to love that, folks.
You know, there's a long hallway with the benches.
We got the mics pointed at so you can see
and
it.
And the lights coming in through the windows, and it's mostly gray.
Yes.
But still, it's not a depressing picture at all.
No, it isn't.
Ellis Island has a long history here in the United States, and it's got some sad stories around it.
But a shot like that...
It's a beautiful shot. And it's I mean, you look at it with your photographic eye,
yes, Ken. I think it's a very good shot. Now, as you said, I don't see nothing depressing about that shot at all. I love the light coming through there, and the light, it always helps things out to make things, no matter how gloom and doom it is.
Spreading the shadows.
You get some good lighting
like it is.
Yeah. You get some good pattern like that. You only can feel better when you see something like that.
Now, you brought some works with you too, right?
Yes.
So we could talk about one of those.
Yes. Okay.
And then we'd like, if you would be so kind as to like do a poem.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Please. Do a poem. I mean, I heard you read at the gallery, and I would say this guy's good.
Oh, he's a very good poet.
He's got it going on over there. You know. Yeah.
Let's see one of your works. And again, it's dusk. How did I know?
How did I know?
But you know, these painters who paint these dusk paintings always get on my nerves.
Why?
Because you can paint it better than I can photograph it. I tell this to a lot of people all the time. You know, don't show me no sunset photographs because you're really not going to really nail it unless it's absolutely got to be.
I have a guess.
But a painter, I have seen better paintings of sunsets than I have a photograph. Look at the fact that it's a cityscape. How many photographers do I see shoot cityscapes, sunsets?
That's not red
one
sunset.
One in every thousand.
That was Hamburg.
Pardon me?
Hamburg. I was driving down the road. I came to a stoplight. I saw that. I lifted the camera and handheld just shot the picture.
I have an idea.
Better as a pain than a photograph.
You know why?
Why?
Because a camera takes an instant shot. It's like a split second.
Yes.
That's what it takes.
That's true.
Whereas he paints that over a period of time, and things are going to change as he paints it.
Well, right? The other thing
look at that.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a bunch of cars parked on
Hurdle Avenue.
Yeah.
Right outside Grandma Maury's.
I know that spot, and if I went to the
Mexican restaurant?
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. A photograph is that fixed moment. This is exactly the opposite. A painter can take working from a photograph, can enhance and fudge and smidge, you know.
Oh, they could do
well,
that.
Birchfield did that. Remember, he had all four seasons in one painting?
They photographic scenes of sunsets today digitally, but they still don't come up to that.
Right, but if I'm working from a photograph, which I often do, if something needs color enhancement, I color enhance. I'm Photoshop before they invited Photoshop.
Unless you're Gene Witkowski. Right?
Yeah, unless you're Gene Witkowski. Yeah. Right.
You can hear that Gene Witkowski. I still seen in my lifetime as a photographer and traveling to shows and so forth, the paintings of sunsets always strike me better than the paintings of photographs.
I think sunsets are very romantic, too. You know, just because it's breaking the day in half. It's not nighttime. Right. It's not sunny.
It's also the most fleeting moment of the day. Very, very fleeting.
Yeah. The big word is gloaming. They call it gloaming.
Gloaming. That's right.
Spell that, please.
G-L-O-A-M-I-N-G.
Right.
And the reverse of that is nature.
It's nature. On the other side, it mud, you know.
We have run out of time for the first half of a segment of our show.
How could it possibly
It's time
that
for
we
our midpoint
out.
Song. Already it's time for the midpoint song. So, sorry, we're going to interrupt you a little bit, George.
Run that midpoint song.
When we come back, we'll have George do some of his poetry.
Definitely.
But, we're going to play our midpoint song here, and it's called Whoa, Babe, from 1937 by the Larry
Clinton.
Was that
one of the girls that stayed in the apartment at the time?
Oh, that's the one who told me to get a cell phone. Uh-huh. We won't go there, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Whoa, Babe, by Larry Clinton Orchestra from 1937.
Thank you.
And that was such a lively little number by the Larry Clinton Orchestra. That is beautiful.
I like them when they're nice and lively like that, especially at my age.
Nice and lively. It keeps a little pep in our step.
Oh, it does. That.
Now you,
that now sponsors gin.
During the song, you were still talking about how great you love sunsets.
Oh, yeah.
Please reiterate.
I will reiterate this again. I still prefer a great painting of a sunset than a photograph. I mean, it's just something about a painting of a sunset comes across better than a photograph of a sunset. Probably because I've seen thousands of photographic sunsets, mostly with sailboats in front of them. But the paintings, they're just usually the best.
It's ironic that you said that, because this week, a poet whose work she hires me to... Uh-huh. You know, edit and proofread and, you know, makes critiques of her poetry. She wrote a poem about a sunset that no painter could ever replicate. Uh-huh. And I sat back and said, I take great offense at that. She said, well, it's true. I said, you haven't seen some of the sunsets I've been able to paint and that I've seen in paintings.
Oh, yeah.
And so we got into a fist fight, rolled out into the street, half of a hurdle, and cops everywhere. You know, it was a mess.
Yeah. Like a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Yeah.
Clean that mess up. That's right. And he left behind. But I'll stand on it again. I've seen photographs of sunsets from all over the world. I've seen them from Lake Erie. They're good. They're good. Some of them are really great. But still, that one painting of a sunset I've walked into, it's a studio or into a gallery, and I've seen them.
Yeah.
The photographs can't touch them.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, because in Nashville, I could hardly ever get sunsets worth a
I can imagine.
But Western New York, great.
Yeah, we got some great sunsets here. No doubt about that.
Don't they say it's because of the particulate matter?
No, right? It's because we're facing Canada.
Canada. Yeah. And they throw up fogs screens.
Right,
and, you know, and they speak that A
Canadians are over there. For our Canadian listeners, you know.
They tend to obfuscate.
Like, I always tell people, we're the only city in the United States that can see a Canadian sunset.
We already played that song on the show. Several episodes, a couple years ago,
that's
actually.
That's right.
George, did you know we've been on the air for 4 years now?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't told us off.
As you heard at the beginning of the episode, this is our 45th episode.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine that.
And,
45.
And who are you and what am I doing here?
You're still going to leave, you know?
Wait a minute. So I was counting. I thought I was being taken into being interrogated.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, where's the Blackwater jack-booted thugs?
When the guys picked you up, I'm sorry they were wearing the trench coats and the slouch hats. Yeah. You know, I'm sorry they just like to dress.
You mean I'm not going to be waterboarded?
Well, you won't get waterboarded today.
What, were you looking forward to it?
You couldn't afford the board. Was the problem.
We didn't know. Well, who knows?
We could afford the water, but the board cost too much.
So before you were a painter, George, you had been dabbling in poetry, right? You were writing poems at 15.
I was doing that, but not. I wasn't. Poems were to writing what watercolors are to my art. They were daunting, and so I avoided that. I mean, I dabbled it in, I stayed away from it. I wrote a little bit, but I got into playwriting.
Playwriting? Oh, really?
That was the first one.
Ooh, interesting. That's a lot more involved.
I think that's more work, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to move other bodies. Well,
kind of hard to push them along on paper.
You know where they're lying.
Well, actually.
Push it along. Get the eraser. I can't move it out. You know.
Stage directions, you know. And then you write the stage directions, and then if the director disagrees with you, they just
put it on the wall over there, right?
Yeah, right.
So one of my students who's taking photography asked me a question. Well, why would a writer need an office? Well, I said, well, they got to have room to put stuff on the wall. I said, when they write all this stuff out, they got to be able to spread it out. And they can't keep a little stack like that and go, they got to have it spread it out.
And it's also, you want to go someplace where you're, you know, away from everybody.
Yeah, so he gave me this funny look. I still can't figure it out, Mr. Morgan. I said, well, become a writer and you will.
So what say we have a little bit of George's poetry?
I think that's an excellent say.
Okay. This is called Begging It. It was a top 30 finalist in the Wurgle Flomp Humorous Poetry Competition. I kid you not.
Did he just slur his words?
Yeah.
What was that?
Another gin.
Redneck Kassin.
Another gin in then my lips, and it'll be a...
redneck thing.
2,300 entries worldwide, wow. And I hit top 30 with this.
Well, congratulations, George.
Now, I'm going to try and read this as seriously as possible.
We've heard this before. This is the poem he read in the gallery that night.
I love this.
Bagging it. When I buy bagged corn chips, a bag of potatoes, and a bag of cheddar cheese popcorn, and I take these bagged items to the cash register, if I don't watch, the cashier will throw these bagged items into a bag, and if I say there's no need to bag these bagged items, she will look at me as if I just sneezed a volcanic truck. What? No bag? Are you sure you don't want these bagged? And I really have to think about it. Not whether I need these bagged items for their bag, but how to answer her. And I tell her, do you know that over 100 billion bags fill our landfills, hang like icicles off power lines, float on oceans, not total but added every year? And she cocks her head as if to say, that's an interesting bit of trivia. A social problem on a world scale. But how does that apply to us? You've got three items here at this register which need to be bagged. You didn't bring your personal bag to bag them in. I've got two more hours in my shift working for minimum wage plus a retirement t-shirt and most normal people bagged items. And I'm so worried her head might explode from this sudden paradigm shift, this unexpected global overview, that an argument might erupt, spilling onto the street, consuming the city. And the more I think about it, what's this all about but containment? What's America about but containment? Be it drug suspects, terror suspects, commies, toxic spills, seasonal epidemic, unorthodoxies, thoughts that make too much sense, or little chips, pre-pop popcorn, and fat potatoes.
Oh, yeah. Fat potatoes.
And if I don't catch her at the right moment, if I tell her after she bags my pack of chewing gum in a huge plastic bag, yes. I don't need a bag for that. She will take the item out of the bag and crumple up the bag, which completely misses the point. And I've lost so much sleep over this that I now find myself sleepwalking with bags under my eyes.
Now, I have to take a little credit for that. When we were in George's gallery, Meridian West, on Hurdle Avenue, 1209 Hurdle Avenue.
Give it a hit.
I was talking to your partner, Nancy, and Nancy said, do you want to hear George read a poem? And I said, oh, sure. So because I was talking to his partner, he read a poem, and this older fellow comes up and says, do you have that for sale? And you made a sale that
I
night.
Made a sale that
thanks
day.
To me. Excellent. Where's my 10%?
As a matter of fact...
I must say,
I just wanted to dig
I
one of those little bells.
A dime. No,
that's a marvelous poem. It's funny, but it also has a lot of purpose to it.
Yeah. That's what I saw on TV today. Yeah. Some actor, I can't think of the Irons. What's the guy named?
Jeremy.
Yeah.
Jeremy Irons.
He's a big advocate of this nonsense with all this bags and so forth.
Oh, the green.
They showed on there how many bags of
Oh, they're floating in the ocean, like he said in the poem. Yeah, we have a Sargasso Sea of plastic bags.
And the whole beach somewhere over in Asia somewhere. Ah. It's nothing but 40 feet high or whatever. Plastic bags and so forth.
Well, I think we might have George read another poem in a little bit. But,
I think that's a good idea.
You know what time it is?
Oh,
it's time for the Mr. Answer Man segment again. Mr. Answer Man is not back in person, but through the miracle of recording science here in the 21st century, we are able to listen to things of profundity that he gave last time he was on the show. So we're going to listen to a little segment about Mr. Answer, by Mr. Answer Man.
Yes.
That's right. And the question was, just take a listen.
Yes.
And you'll see. All right. This is John Ferrallo, Mr. Answer Man.
Ken, you understand, I've never been married. And you are a married man.
Yes.
I'm an unmarried man.
Yes.
And there are people who will come up to me and they will say, Carl, you're a man about town. He goes, what is the best way to impress the ladies. I thought about that and thought about it. I actually cogitated on this question. And finally,
what did you come up with?
I couldn't come up with it. So I actually said, well, I'm going to ask Mr. Answer Man.
There you go.
He'll know.
Yes.
So, Mr. Answer Man, what is the best way to impress the ladies?
I know he's
okay,
got an answer for this.
First thing you have to do, you got to create an image of a caring, compassionate male, a nurturer, a protector.
Oh, yes.
I suggest going to the local animal shelter and adopting the most pathetic, lovable pup.
Oh, puppy.
Yeah, that's right. You know, get the puppy. Okay. And now next time you're getting ready to go out onto town, you take that puppy and you shove him in your pants. Okay. You don't want a kitten. This is why you don't want a kitten. Okay, and then you stick his head out of your zipper so he can breathe.
What? And you get my camera here.
Yeah, next time you go to the little, you go to your club or coffee shop.
Yeah,
act casual.
Meet other people of the opposite.
Act casual, act confident. A girl walks by, gives a little pup a shake. When they start cooing and stroking his head, introduce yourself. They'll be impressed by your confidence, your ability to carry things in your pants.
Sir, are you a kangaroo?
From there, you'll be able to turn puppy love into giving the dog a bone. Keep wearing pants, America.
You know, that's one of the most popular segments on the Burnham and Dodge Art Hour.
I believe so.
He is just something. You know, the man doesn't do drugs. That's the interesting thing.
Yeah. Go
figure. He goes up on his Fortress of Solitude and then cogitates for 3 months and comes back with a whole batch of new answers to questions.
Sometimes they don't have questions for the answer, but he has them ready just in case.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. He does.
You got to love him for that.
Tell us a little bit about the Buffalo Society of Artists. You know, we've had a couple people on. Gary Wolf back in September 2011 when he was president, and current president Richard Christian will be a guest on our show this summer.
That's what I'm looking forward
to.
That one.
What's the job of the president of an artist society?
Yes.
I mean, it must be like, you know, trying to keep cats from running out. Running out the fence, you know.
We're getting out of here right now.
You're herding ducks or what? What is it like?
I will try to give you the most definitive analysis. As I see it, and it's mainly to
you're on for your life now.
Take drugs. Take drugs, and subdue.
There's got to be a crisis like every day with all those artists, those flighty, flighty artists.
Oh, there's got to be. Somebody got to line them up and straighten them out. Keep them in order now. Those ducks straighten out.
My first day as president, there wasn't a swearing in because I would have sworn.
How about
a former president, short woman, very feisty. She came up to Anita Johnson. She came up to me. She put her finger in my face and said, my advice to you, first day, take Advil. Take Advil. I said, Anita, why would you say that? She said, my first day as president, there was a fight between two of my board members, and one of them, they both resigned the next meeting. That was it.
Oh, man.
And you pat her on the head, and you have your first meeting. Uh-huh. There was some carryover from the previous administration. Bad blood between the previous president and the treasurer. And his treasurer was my treasurer, and he came on as a board member. And the whole meeting was, former president said yellow, and the treasurer said blue and green, you know, disagreements. So the board all adjourned except for these two, and they continued to fight, and the treasurer stormed out. Next thing you know, the former president resigned from the board, and this treasurer stayed on. And so that was a resignation after my first meeting.
Your first day.
I'm going through. For those of you who are just listening, because we don't have TV cameras on, I'm doing a pantomime of me swallowing a whole bottle of that. Advil because there were several such resignations, mainly because this treasurer was feisty. She was rude to many, many people. Brilliant.
But we do want to remind our listeners that the Burnham and Dodge Art Hour is best accepted and best represented by 3D Radio.
Exactly.
You know. No, what's the word? Best appreciated?
Best appreciated.
Not 3D.
Yeah, 3D Radio. Radio.
We have it here.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. You can get it at Radio Shack for $39.95.
Exactly.
Okay, I sound very holographic
and get you 5%
right
off.
Yeah, of course, drugs are a necessity.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Mention that day, another 5% off.
Advil.
Psychoallergenic drugs.
Yes. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory.
So, okay, I understand the pitfalls of becoming a president, but why would you want to become president?
Sounds good. I'm present.
I wasn't on my medication. Psychotropic. Because Carl, it's my chance at greatness. To those who are just listening, Carl just choked on his tongue.
Yeah, well, I know Jackie Onassis, it happened to her when she fell off her horse.
Right.
As a child.
Yeah.
Swallowed your tongue.
Swallowed that tongue.
Yeah.
So,
get it out of there.
No, actually, I wanted to follow my predecessor, who was Gary Wolf.
I like that guy.
Changing, you know, in molding the organization for the 21st century.
Yeah.
Because it had been caught somewhere in the middle of the 19th century.
Oh, join. Hold on to it now. Yeah. Hold on right now.
You felt there was a purpose that could be
served.
Served. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had kind of an organizational mind. I wasn't really good at getting a lot of other things done, but I had it organized by committees and very well streamlined that way.
Oh.
Plus, we went through the redesign of our website, which was major. And we had to raise funds, you know, to keep the organization going, and we had that. That was successful.
Now, how many members are in the BSA?
250.
Oh, dad, my. I know it's no 250.
They're all Western New York artists?
Are they all white guys or black guys or white guys?
It's a zebra coalition.
Yeah. I wonder about that.
Of course, it's one black stripe.
One
black stripe in the middle. Yeah, that's right. Everyone else is like a white stripe.
Well, it used to be a bunch of pretty much older white folks. You know? Grumpy older white folks.
Well, I think the youth of America, they don't want to belong to anything unless it's a Justin Bieber fan club.
Youth of America.
They just don't want to belong, you know?
Yeah.
Justin Bieber.
But we have gotten younger people. Yeah.
The Buffalo Society of Artists had a show recently, 2 or 3 months ago, at the Carpelli's Manuscript Museum.
Yep.
And I must say, Mark Labatelli, who's been on our show, he hung the pictures, I think.
Right.
And it was a beautiful show.
Exhibition committee, yeah.
Your stuff, I mean, there wasn't a piece in there that I thought was shabby.
I agree. I raced through that show before it closed that evening.
You showed up late. Yes. That's true. Yeah.
Great.
But it was a great show.
Yeah. Buffalo has an incredible oversaturation of very, very
hard to make a living.
And I agree to that. That's probably been one of my key, what's the word I'm looking for? My key.
Complaints?
Not complaints. Maybe criticism. But that's been one of my key, doorknob or something.
Potato.
Potato.
As Mr. Answerman would say.
Potato. I think this town is over-talented.
I think so.
There's a surfeit of talent.
It is.
You know why there's a surfeit of talent? Why it's over-talented? Because there's so many great artists, it's hard for the population who's really blue collar to appreciate.
And
there's
too
many good artists, and we don't have the population base to support it.
Yeah.
Right?
And the cost of living is low enough that artists can survive here.
But
they can't sell for a lot of money.
Because and the reason why I think we have that major problem is because our Buffalo media is more concerned with sports than they are with art.
Oh, no. By all means.
Now, we're running low on time here, but I did want to ask you one thing.
Okay.
Running low
on
time. Talk
a little bit about opening a gallery.
It's please do.
Not only does this man volunteer to become president of the Buffalo Society of Artists, but then he opens himself wide open to this huge economic outlay of opening a gallery.
Yeah, what were you thinking about?
What were the hell? What drugs were you not taking then?
We want to know. Is that what we want to know?
Well, I teamed up with Nancy Clark Mariani, who is a...
That's right. You're not alone in this endeavor.
Right. She is a fantastic pastel artist.
Yeah, I've been knowing her for a while. Yeah, she's good. She really good people.
Very good. She just got accepted as a full member, a signature member of the Pastel Society of America.
Whoa, I am impressed.
Congratulations.
Which is
no small thing. No small thing.
I hope she's listening to the show.
Yeah, well, she wants to, and she will. We became artistic allies, friends, really great friends, helping each other, coaching each other, critiquing each other. And she needed a better space to have a studio. I always wanted a better space for a studio, but I also wanted a gallery. So we were having a little difficulty with a certain local gallery.
Visions of grandeur, are we talking, George? Is that what we're talking here?
No, that's in the next episode. My life.
Shoot that one down. Then.
As an artist with angst.
Any guy who comes from the depths of food stamps is all right with
me. Well, there's not a lot of artists out there who are actually thinking, gee, I should have like my own gallery. I mean, usually it's people who can't produce who want their gallery.
Right. You know, well,
who aren't artists.
Nancy needs something to get her mind away. She does. She teaches at Lancaster High. Yeah, she's have the art department there.
Right.
For the entire all the Lancaster schools, and she is a very hard worker. But she wants to have time away to paint.
I can understand.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, in 7 years she's going to be retiring and she wants to have something to go to.
I don't blame her.
This would be a good thing. Me, my knees are disintegrating even as we sit here talking. So I won't be able to do home remodeling.
You notice
much
he's been shuffling his cat leg every couple minutes. Right?
That's true.
I've been shuffling mine on the one leg over here.
I've got the knee brace too. And I wanted to have something, you know, a studio, but also a gallery. And one day we just went out, looked in some windows along Hurdle Avenue, and we just knew that the former Chateau Buffalo.
Yeah, I remember that place being there.
Yeah. Now, it was perfect.
No, we're at the 43rd Meridian. I presume that's where you got the
name from.
Meridian West. How'd the name come?
We were Googling all kinds of names and everything you put up, you know, like Bird Droppings Gallery. There were 300 names, all trademarked, patented, copyrighted.
Bird Droppings
Gallery. So... We're getting frustrated.
Wait a minute, that's our name, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I went out.
Thule's already been taken.
Yeah.
We're out at Nancy's house. I went outside. I'm having a smoke, and I'm looking. And last time I was here, I saw Blood Meridian, which is the title of Cormac McCarthy's book, Blood Meridian. That red band across the sky at sunset.
There he is again with that.
And so there's Meridian. Okay, we'll be at the west end of Hurdle Avenue business district.
Right.
Meridian West. I went back in, and my wife, who wanted to join us as a partner, and Nancy's twin brother Nelson, who wanted to join us as a partner, they all. You know, did a wave around the house. Yeah. You know, we popped some champagne and corks, and they said, "How do you spell that?" No.
I don't know. You know how to spell it? Get a dictionary. What's that?
Yeah. So, and we Google it. There is no Meridian West anywhere else in the Western Hemisphere. There's Meridian West in the Eastern Hemisphere.
Well, we'll really? Keep them over there.
Or is it the Southern Hemisphere?
What? Isn't that a very nice show this past April that featured several works by various painters?
Yes.
Who are no longer with us.
Uh-huh.
You had something by Charles Birchfield.
Yes.
His daughter, Catherine Parker.
Yes.
The other name.
That one kind of broke my heart.
Margaret Martin.
Margaret Martin.
Mar- Parker.
Catherine Parker, I raise my cup to you.
Passed away last month. What was his name?
Joe Orfeo.
Joe Orfeo, yeah.
We also have the Blair family.
Yes.
Robert, Jeanette, and Bruce.
Is that still up? Well, by the time the show goes up, it probably may no longer be.
Yeah, by Friday. It comes down Friday.
Yeah. It'll already be past tense then.
We'll have, the past tense will turn into pastels. We'll have pastel exhibition next month.
Beautiful.
Well, we talked about your art. We talked about being president of BSA. You did a couple poems here,
George.
Yeah,
I love that part.
And there's so much more we could talk about.
I like to get more into detail about day-to-day.
I'm a man with a past.
You know where I'm heading, though.
I love his past.
You know where I'm heading with this beginning here.
I sure do.
It's the beginning of the end. We're out of time.
There's a song in the car, the beginning of something like that.
The hour has swept by us with such alacrity.
I thought I saw a broom go by with no one riding it or anything.
Did you just hear that?
Yes.
Go by.
That big broom.
You know, it's a
I got cinch
big
marks
broom
on my
of time.
That sonic boom just told us it's gone. It's time.
The big broom of time just
I don't have eyelashes anymore. Just fried them right off.
And so, George, thank you. I'm shaking your hand. Thank you for showing up on the show. And I hope that we can glean of some substance out of this.
I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I will glean a lot out of this, a little bit more out of that gin, too.
Beam me up, Scotty. That's right. But thank you for being on the show, George.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please,
my pleasure being here.
Tell us where Meridian West is one more time.
Please.
It's at 1209?
No, it's at 1209 Hurdle Avenue. Right down the street from Johnny's. Get your meat and get your heart all in one fell swoop.
Doing his best Pat Feldball here.
Yeah.
Right. We are going to... you have anything to say before we go out, Ken?
Yes, stay tuned for our next show and our next guest. If you have any questions that weren't answered today by our guest, come by the gallery or send him an email, and he'll be glad to answer those questions for you.
We have some very great galleries
and
in this
check
town.
That website. And, I mean, hey.
And, you know, check out First Friday.
By all
First
means,
Friday
people.
On Allentown.
Check
a wonderful
it out.
Gallery walk. You know, I mean,
the weather's going to get nice, people.
And
get out
of
your house.
And if you buy art, I won't have to eat the third leg of my cake.
I can understand that. I can understand that.
Great pets like that. You can't eat them all once.
That's right. Buy art.
Buy art.
I cannot stress that enough, because I know you people out there in Buffalo do have the money. Don't give me this line about
you have a friend named Art.
I sure do. Art Pepe.
Art Pepe.
I love that name, Art Pepe.
And if you can't afford it, rob a bank or something.
Well, we're going to go out on a song that has something to do with photography.
Yeah, I
as
hope
usual.
So.
You know, when I run out of these, I don't know what we're going to do.
Well, I hope the listeners send us a few of them.
That would be nice. That would be
nice.
Yeah,
it would be.
So, this is a song by Elton John from 1990, before he started wearing the wig.
I find it hard to believe. I thought the guy had a full head of hair.
Right. This is a song called The Camera Never Lies. Good night, America.
Yes, we'll see you here.
Thank you, George.
Here. Listen to us soon.
We'll see you soon.
I see you tempting eye. I see you take it back. You can tell me you are home, but the camera.